to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining me this week, as always, is the one, the only, Randy Darsh.
Hello everybody, welcome again to another week of the Gym Podcast. It's really interesting recording these late into the year with all these playoff games, but it's fun nonetheless, and we of course have quite a few playoff games to talk about. I have to say, this was probably the most interesting first round of the playoffs since the college football playoff, you know, started back in 2014. We had a couple of good games and then a couple storyline, I guess, games, if you want to call it that. Without further ado, I guess we should just kind of get right into it. There's not a whole lot else to talk about.
Let's rip the band-aid off, Randy. I've got a lot to say about Choklahoma, but just go, you know, gloat for the people, Randy. Get it on your system.
It's one game. Y'all, it's one game. I'm not going to gloat. I mean, I'm very pleased with the performance. Like, if anything, it honestly feels like more of a relief for us to actually pull it together finally, especially after we went down 17-0. To see the continuance of what happened in the SEC championship game, it's like, is this what Kalen DeBoer's tenure is going to be, where the wheels just fall off at the end of every year? But then to like get to win the way we did just felt so good. To spot them 17 points and then still win by 10, it just feels really good. And I understand Oklahoma has a lot of I'm not going to say they're a bad team. They're a great team, but they have deficiencies that can be exploited.
Oklahoma is fighting demons. This fan base, dude, their reaction.
Okay. No, I get that. They're going to sting no matter what, no matter what the context is. To give up a 17-point lead in the playoffs is going to sting no matter what. There's one thing I remember specifically noticing and saying, and I kind of didn't want to say it out loud because it was bad juju to say it out loud, but I remember 30 minutes before kickoff, they were doing this light show. The players were like all huddled together and screaming as loud as possible 30 minutes before kickoff. And I remember sending you a message. You can back me up saying, Oklahoma players seem way too hyped. Cannot be this emotionally amped up and this hyped 30 minutes before the game. You got to be a little bit more composed. While Alabama, our team was just kind of chilling. They were just hanging out, just, you know, being all hunky-dory, chilling. And that really seemed to be the story of the game, because after the, 5 minutes to the second quarter when they were up 17-0, they just completely fell apart.
Once that adrenaline wore off.
It's not even that they like fell apart per se. It's just that you could tell that emotional energy had wore off. It wore off. And we were just there. We were settling into our groove. And we were emotionally stable, ready to play hard, fight, do what we had to do, keep belief. And that's
Oklahoma,
really what it boiled down to. It's a psychological game these days.
The psychological warfare, like I keep saying this. I mean, okay, Oklahoma, dude. They're now 0-5 in the playoffs. This is, I mean, we're reaching a point now where, like, I think we need to seriously discuss whether or not Oklahoma deserves to be in the playoffs anytime in the future. I mean, let's actually be honest.
Even if they're 12-0.
Because, like, every time this happens, they're the only team, for as much as, you know, them blowing this 17-point lead is embarrassing on their end, it's the second time it's happened. Remember when this happened to Georgia in the Rose Bowl?
I do remember that.
The only team to have, they've blown two of the biggest leads in the playoff history. Here's the thing, dude. My biggest gripe, you brought up the whole, like, players shouting and stuff before the game. Obviously, you know, kind of embarrassing in hindsight. For me, it's the fans, they're all wearing this, like, these shirts that say, "Not easy to kill." Have you seen this?
yeah.
But they're the easiest team to kill. But like, look at the records. Like, I don't get it.
What's funny, so they brought up 50 Cent for this, like, in between the third and fourth quarter of live performance.
Yep.
They are so dumb because they literally played our team's designated hype song that they play every single Friday before game day, which is, like, "So Many Men Wishing
Many
Death
men.
On Me" or
many,
something.
Many men. Wish death
and
on
like
me.
You have to admit, Jim, but you have to admit, there's a lot of Alabama haters there out there, justifiably so. I get it. You know, it's just
I wish death on you, Randy. You know this.
I'm just saying the song makes sense for us to embrace the song.
It doesn't make sense. No one hates Oklahoma other than Texas fans. I mean, you might dislike Oklahoma, but like the hatred people have for Bama, no one feels that towards Oklahoma. You know, like
right.
This is what I'm saying. This program is fighting demons. Like, I was thinking so much about this, like, throughout, really ever since the Bama game. Oklahoma has had so much success on the field over the last 15 years. They've had Heisman winners. They've made the playoffs. They've had conference championships. They've had, you know, great seasons, great NFL players getting drafted. And yet, their fan base, I feel like ever since the moment Lincoln Riley left, they have had this massive victim complex. And it's this negative energy from within that permeates to the players, to the teams. And it's what causes them to choke like this, dude. This is why Choklahoma exists. They don't have faith in themselves.
I 100% agree. Like, you actually see with administration and head coaches, like, their attitude is reflected by the fan base. And the fan base kind of picks up on it and adopts it for themselves. And you can kind of see that. Like, it's a very interesting dynamic to see. Like, Indiana, for example, you can tell just when you talk to their fans, they have this, even though they are, like, first-timers being here after being a terrible program for the past 5 decades.
Yeah.
Since forever. Literally the losingest college football program in history. Like, the losingest. Despite that, they now have this belief in themselves and their program, and it's from the top down, from Cignetti. Like, he knows how to compartmentalize everything. Mm-hmm. He is a Saban product, after all. Got to give him
credit. You can tell. He looks like he takes on that pissed off demeanor. You know what I mean? It's no fun. Right. Winning.
They don't let these external things get too much into their head.
Yeah. Whereas Oklahoma's pure external, you know?
Exactly. Like, I cannot think of the more epitomization of external influences than the hype music 30 minutes before the game and bringing 50 Cent out to create instead of just being ready to play.
For me, it's the Tebow thing. They still call him Tebow. They still bring up the brisket. Guys, it's almost 2020. Like, let the brisket go. That's the only way you can heal. That's the only way you prevent this from happening again. Like, you need to let it go, dude.
I wanted to actually make a point, too, about on-the-field play calling psychological warfare, because we did that perfectly. Our defensive coordinator, Kane Womack. So just to give a little bit of perspective, when we started the game, we would only rush for, try to contain the quarterback run game. But what would happen is we couldn't generate any pass rush doing that. So that's when he would make all those deep throws in the first quarter and the first part of the second quarter, is because we weren't rushing anybody. He had all day to throw. He could pick us apart. Any quarterback at the Power 4 level can do that. So we adjusted. He started bringing blitzes. It actually worked. We were able to get in his head a little bit. And you could see he got some kind of like happy feet a little bit. So at that point, what we started doing is we started showing blitz and then dropping our defensive ends back, disguising blitzes, but a lot of showing blitz and then dropping players back. And that directly led to the pick six, because that's what happened on that play. Showing blitz, he panicked a little bit, tried to get his first read out, and it was from a player we had dropped back. So I'm just saying, that's psychological warfare when it comes to the game planning. You have to get in their heads a little bit. This game is so psychological, and I thought this weekend was the perfect just epitomization of that.
Bama's mental fortitude, I'm telling you, it's inherently just going to be good, because I think there is this, like, regardless of who's at the helm, the players who are playing at Bama still very much believe, you know, this is Bama, this is the dynasty, this is do or die kind of a thing.
Said as much, actually, in their interviews. They said what Kalen always says, what Kalen always preaches, Kalen DeBoer always preaches, the game will come back to you, just keep playing. Mm-hmm. The game will come back to you. And trust us as coaches. And they did, and it paid off. Also, I had to give a shout out. I know this is going to upset people, but congratulations to Kalen DeBoer for being the first coach to win a road playoff game.
Boo. Okay, here's the thing. Come on.
I had to do it, man.
No, we're going to have this. I mean, it's obviously, yes, congrats. But in this new era, yeah, there's going to be new records being set every year in some capacity. I mean, we also had, I think, the lowest scoring playoff game of the 12-team era up next, if we want to talk about it.
Yeah, we could talk about that.
Well, folks, let's pivot here to the morning game after Bam Oklahoma. Number 10 Miami taking down number 7 Texas A&M in honestly like the most pathetic playoff game I think I've ever seen. Did you watch this one, Randy?
I watched the whole game. It was an absolute sicko game in the worst possible way.
Not a good way.
Football. It was weird because it's like you could kind of sort of see both teams be able to move the football a little bit, but they can never. So many missed field goals, so many dropped passes, not capitalizing in the red zone. All these like mistakes that you just have to not make if you're going to make a deep playoff run. Congratulations to Miami for winning. I actually think that was I don't want to say a great performance, but they did what they needed to do, right? They showed up at the last part of the fourth quarter. They got the game-winning interception. They had a game-winning touchdown. I mean, that they showed up when they absolutely had to, and they have a very, very good defense. So hats off to them. Texas A&M, I honestly, like, don't know how their fans have a will to live.
Hey, they won the volleyball national championship like the next day, so they have that. They're a volleyball school.
They have something going for them, but that this takes battered Aggie syndrome to a whole new level because it's like no matter what, we're not going 8-4, and I honestly feel like this is worse than going 8-4.
Oh, definitely.
Like mentally.
I mean, let us not forget. Like a few weeks ago, they were the number 3 team in the country, undefeated, in the driver's seat to make the SEC championship and probably win it, and just complete collapse since then. They've lost their last 2 games. Lost to their rival Texas, and now this. I mean, this is, I can't even imagine.
Again, it's the mentality of like the coach and the administration seeping down into the fan base where they like, they kind of know a collapse is coming. They expect it, and then lo and behold, it happens.
It would explain how they played so sloppy. Like, I don't know. It's just, this is what was so frustrating about this game. It was 0-0 at half. And it wasn't because of some great defensive efforts or anything like that. It really was because of, like you said, all the missed field goals, like really bad fumbles. I saw a number of just terrible throws, like deep overthrows to the receivers.
Yes.
I was describing it to my dad over the weekend. It looked like Wisconsin playing Wisconsin at moments. that's how bad it looked, folks. And so, I don't know, man. I remember going on Discord at the time when people are watching this game, and kind of everyone collectively agrees whoever wins this game is going to be demolished by Ohio State, and that's just kind of the vibe I got, dude. Like, to be a Notre Dame fan watching this, I don't know.
To be fair, I mean, both teams that got in over Notre Dame did win their playoff game. I know we can't look at it retroactively like that, but I'm just saying it does kind of lead a little bit of credence. I mean, they lost to both of those teams.
I know. Week one, things too, change though, man. Over the course of the year. I don't know.
A lot of things change over the course of the year. Like, this is not the same. I mean, I don't even know if I want to say that because part of it is Texas A&M had by far the worst schedule in conference. They only played the entire bottom half of the conference until the final week of the season. They finally played a decent team in the conference. They got really lucky with that, and they lost. They got dominated. Yeah. They finally play another decent team, and they just look so sloppy.
At least with Miami, we kind of knew for a while now that they're kind of fraudulent. You know, with A&M, they get this like luxury of playing bad schools week after week after week.
I would honestly, as a fan, rather know if I'm fraudulent early on.
Yes.
You know, for everything that's said about Bama, one thing nobody can say is that we're fraudulent. Like, everybody knows we can technically beat anybody any given day. It's just a matter of frustration that we're like the beast you can't actually finally kill.
We'll see,
Randy. I feel like that's the difference.
I don't know. I keep going back to that Florida State game. But, you know, it is what it is. let's move on. There were two other games, of course, that night that I don't know if anyone watched. I did. Did you watch it, Randy?
I watched both of them.
Okay.
We'll start with Tulane Ole Miss. So I noticed a lot of people in the first half giving Tulane a lot of credit, which I don't think is undeserved. It was 17-3 at the half, and people were talking about this great fight by Tulane. And it's this interesting dichotomy where it's like, for one, I don't want to treat Tulane like a charity case. If you're in the playoff, I want to judge you based on the standards of a playoff team.
Sure.
But I kind of understand they're invited based on the auto bid rules, which is fine. I'm actually totally fine with that. I said my piece about that last week, that I like the idea of group of 6 auto bids, all conferences getting auto bids, treating the playoff itself and the opportunity itself as a reward, and how it creates parity in the future and is better for the overall long-term health of the sport.
Right.
That said, you could just tell they were overmatched, but it's so interesting to watch a group of 5 team that's solid fundamentally doing their best, and you can just tell that's what's going on, compared to maybe a power 4 team that just sucks, losing by the same score, where they're not physically overmatched, but they're just so sloppy.
Yeah.
Like, Tulane wasn't sloppy, they were just overmatched.
Right. Yeah, no, Tulane, I mean, obviously, Tulane, James Madison as well, like, very well-coached teams, of course. Like, they're the best of the best as far as G5.
Well-coached teams, lacking talent.
Yeah. And, I mean, for what it's worth, like, this one is frustrating because, like, Tulane played Ole Miss earlier in the year. They lost by, what, like, 35 points or something. And
yeah,
just to see that happen again, it was just... I don't know. I remember, like, I know last year's first playoff game sucked as well, but I don't know. It would have been nice to see something a bit more competitive.
I think they are trying to get these rematches out of the way in the first week, because I know the first round of the playoff, as much as everybody's going to watch it, it doesn't have the same hype and build up as like the Rose Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl, wherever they played. I get that they want to get these out of the way early, get them out of the way on campus, so you're not really going to see them. I think it's interesting. Ole Miss actually has two rematches in a row. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
We will.
But I actually think that's probably the right decision, is to get the rematches out of the way first round if you can help it.
And they certainly did. Another one, of course, Oregon took on James Madison. The score was technically closer, but in a lot of ways, the first half felt like way more of a blowout. Oregon went up, let me see here. They went up
34-6 at the half, and they scored every offensive possession.
Yeah, I mean, I get
except for that. One, they had an interception. They threw one interception.
Get that James Madison technically crawled back and made it.
51-34 final score.
They covered the spread, but like, you get a sense that Oregon was kind of...
They let their foot off the gas. They played a lot of second and third stringers in the second half, which is fine. You know, I'm not going to hold that against them. Mm. But there's something very distinct about Oregon's play style that worries me. That would worry me if I was an Oregon fan looking ahead to Texas Tech. And instead, I noticed that they very much hinge on, like, their play style and play calling is very much get your athletes out in space and just let them out-athlete the defender one-on-one. Mm-hmm. That doesn't translate well to these high-profile games. That's why they lost by 10 to Indiana at home, despite having a pick six in that game.
Yeah.
It doesn't really translate as well.
No, I agree. I mean, it works really well against, you know, inferior talent. Like in this case, there was just a talent mismatch between them and James Madison. And we saw, like, that was apparent from the start. I remember their first drive, they scored in like 30 seconds, like off of a couple of very deep shots downfield. And they just had a man open in space. But like that's just not going to work against pretty much any remaining, you know, team here in the playoffs. So yeah, it's a weird case, man. Again, you talk about like psychology of teams, like Oregon, it's one of those teams where like they're kind of known for being a style over substance type program. And I don't see anything in this year's unit that suggests to me they're different and like capable of actually making a serious playoff run, like a serious shot at the Natty, despite on paper having as much talent as is, you know, necessary to win it all.
Right. And when I compare their style, like how they play, like I said, it's almost like the polar opposite of how DeBoer's style is. And I'm just bringing this up again because that's what I know to compare it to, where we absolutely do not try to necessarily just win games by out-athleting anyone. Most programs like this are going to have play designs that are, you know, set to get their athletes in space, and we don't do that. It's pretty much all schemes, play callings, and matchups. Mm-hmm. The thing is, like, with the way Oregon plays, it lets the opposing defense set where they're going to put the ball. So the defense is choosing where Oregon goes with the ball, essentially, when you play like that. When you're playing against a really top-rated DC and top-level athletes on defense, they're going to get you. You're going to play right into their hand because they're going to trick you into doing it.
Unlucky for them, they play one of the best defenses in the country coming up soon.
Right, exactly. And like with us, it's like we know what we want to do with on offense, and we're going to try to keep forcing it until it works. And you see that happen with multiple three and outs in a row, mm-hmm. and then scoring 34 points to close out the game.
Yeah, I know. It's infuriating as a hater, but it's one way to get the football into the end zone. So yeah, I mean, overall, this first round, I don't know. It felt like, honestly, the games kind of got progressively worse as it went on. But again, I'm trying to like stay optimistic here. Last year's first round was terrible, but the round after was excellent. So I really do think as we lean into the remaining teams here, like looking at the matchups ahead, I think they're all, at least on paper, pretty exciting, wouldn't you say?
Yes, very much so.
Shall we preview them, Randy?
Actually, do you want to talk about the bowl games? There's only four, it looks like, they're going to come out before Thursday. Well, it's before next Thursday. Yeah, we need to talk about them before next Thursday, not this coming up Thursday.
Let's talk some bowl sponsors, Randy. What do we got?
Okay. We actually have already talked about... Oh, no, I see what we're doing. Okay. On Friday, December 26th, we have the Game Above Sports Bowl featuring Central Michigan and Northwestern. And it's in Detroit, Michigan, the middle of December.
Folks, thankfully it's an indoor game. Game Above, what is Game Above? Is this like a betting thing?
That I think it is.
Wow. I'm on their website right now. Bring forth greatness, it says. Okay, I'm accepting cookies.
Philanthropy focused on inspiring greatness through sports, entertainment, and youth organization. Okay, okay, this actually is not sports betting. I'm pleasantly surprised.
Philanthropy? Is this like a...
A youth athletic sports go out and play type program charity thing.
Okay, so the building, like, they're like, okay. It's very vague. If you go to the website, like, it's just got a lot of pictures of, like, all these Detroit teams.
What? I don't understand. Okay, let me just read this to you. Okay. Game Above is a brand deeply committed to philanthropy, focused on inspiring greatness through sports, entertainment, and youth organizations. Supported by our parent company, Capstone Holdings, our ownership and for-profit initiatives, Game Above Sports and Game Above Entertainment are dedicated to fostering impact and innovation in the sectors in which we operate. That sounds kind of suspect. I'm going to be honest.
I mean, all this, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think they build, like, sports, like, complexes, like, based off their website here. You can see a couple of, like, these branded, you know, like, indoor
buildings. I see that.
For, like, basketball or something.
That's exactly what it is. Because I'm seeing, like, this, like, golf thing.
It's yeah,
like
a, yeah.
Where they bring down the screen and then this indoor on-turf yep. golf thing where yep. you can play golf on a screen.
Okay. Interesting. All right. All right. I mean, I don't hate the idea, but with things like this, you never know, man. Like, it does sound like it could be kind of.
They also have this entertainment sector I told you about where it's an award-winning film production company.
Well, come on.
Financier that creates captivating cinematic stories for audiences worldwide.
Oh, my Lord. All right.
And it talks about how they're philanthropic in giving, but it doesn't say who they give to. So, like, I don't know. Wild. That's.
Cool.
All right, that's interesting. And what is, I guess the Sports Bowl is just the name of the bowl game. I've never heard of the Sports Bowl.
Yeah, is that new too? What, hold up. I didn't even think about that. That's such a ridiculous name.
Detroit's always had a bowl game, though.
They have. Well, it used to be the Motor City Bowl, wasn't it?
Okay, yeah, I remember the Motor City Bowl. Let me see. It says 2014. Okay, it used to be the Quick Lane Bowl.
Okay.
Okay, I remember the Quick Lane Bowl.
Okay.
Next up at 3:30, we have Minnesota. Playing 9-3 New Mexico in
Boo!
The Rate Bowl.
Sorry.
The Rate Bowl. This used to be the guaranteed Rate Bowl, right?
Is it? Let's look this up. We're doing the research here, folks.
Rate Bowl, Arizona since 1989. Oh, it's one of the older bowl games. Okay.
What did it used to be? Was it?
Yeah,
it
used to be the guaranteed rate.
So it's no longer guaranteed, folks? 2025, we can't guarantee our rates anymore.
They want people to get in those ARM mortgages, those adjustable rate mortgages,
don't
they?
What is going on? Yuck. Yuck. Come on. I miss when this was the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. I remember that.
I think it is kind of cool that this has been a bowl game since 1989, just with varying sponsors in Phoenix, Arizona. Guaranteed rate. I'm assuming this is some type of mortgage sponsor.
Let's see. Yeah, like, did they?
I just don't know why they changed it from guaranteed rate to rate. That's what I'm trying to figure
yeah,
out.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Rate.com. Ah, man. If you go to rate.com, I'm just so predatory about it all, man. Like, for me, man, like, when I don't know about you, Randy, when I bought my house, I just went through, like, my local credit union. Like, I didn't get one of these apps to, like, buy me a house. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I found somebody local as well. I don't want to give my information to these people because the second you, like, even Google the word refinance, you get spammed with so much stuff.
I should not
if
have
you
done
ever,
that. Yeah.
If you ever give your information to any type of, like, Rocket Mortgage or anything just to see what rates are, you are going to get spammed with 20 phone calls a day.
Yep. Yep.
Which it is just not worth it.
It sums up Minnesota, I think, as a program. So, you know, shady. Shady.
Shady. Okay.
It's fitting.
At 7 p.m. on Friday the 26th, we have the Serve Pro First Responder Bowl.
Okay, so Serve Pro. This has been going on for a while, right? I'm pretty sure.
UTSA and Florida International. Yeah. Okay. I know the First Responder Bowl has been a thing for a while. I'm trying to figure out Serve Pro. Is it like a POS system?
It's the number one choice in cleanup and restoration, Randy, obviously. According to the website, at least. It's like, yeah, that's interesting. Because they're all, I've got one here in Madison. I don't know if you have one in Alabama. But it's
like never. Oh, hey, we are in their service area.
National chain, okay.
Showing up based on my location, okay.
I actually need some mold remediation in my house. So, I mean, it'd be kind of fun to like call them while the game's on. And I'm like, hey guys, check it out. Watching the game, sort of thing, you know. Fascinating. All right. I'll as far as sponsors go, I'll allow this one. It doesn't seem too
I'll have this one too. I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
On Saturday, December 27th.
I love this one. I love this one. Get it. This is my favorite one.
Me too. I know it. The Go Bowling Military Bowling.
Let's go, dude. Literally, I remember looking this up years ago. Go Bowling, it's this, like, initiative to get people playing bowling.
That's just interesting.
Like,
okay.
I think it's just, like owned by, like, I don't even think there's, like, a big corporation behind it. Like, I think it's just, like, a bunch
Somebody's
of bowlers got together.
Is there, like, a bowling? Is there a bowling organization, like a professional? I know there's a professional bowling organization.
Like,
I don't know what
maybe they're
called.
Behind it, but like it's so wholesome. I love bowling, dude. You know this. I love bowling, and obviously
it is very wholesome.
The play on words of bowl season and bowling, like you can't. Come on, It's so good.
No,
it's
I so get good. It. It's like the ultimate, most wholesome suburban teenage activity to go do with your friends in high school to just go bowling.
I still do it.
It's where, like, you would imagine you want your kids to be spending their weekends rather than doing degenerate stuff. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. And I'm looking ahead, dude. Literally, my two favorite bowls are back-to-back here. I'll talk about the next one. We got Penn State playing Clemson in the Bad Boy Bowers Pinstripe Bowl. A little bit about this, dude. I've got a couple of friends from college who I don't know why, but, like, we started, like, an inside joke about the Bad Boy Mowers from, like, these bowl games. And, like, yeah. I'm a bad boy, like stuff like that, you know, and like it stuck with me all these years. I'm so happy to see that Bad Boy Mowers is still around sponsoring the Pinstripe Bowl.
I don't think I've ever seen a Bad Boy Mower. In
me,
years. I see just looking at their products though, it looks mostly like commercial, like actual professional landscaper products.
Yeah, but just something
it's geared towards.
I'm a bad boy mower, like just the bad boys.
It's a cool name. It's a cool name.
It's so
I also wanted to point out both of these bowls are in the far north, in
right.
Annapolis, Maryland, and the Bronx, New York, in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, and the next one is as well. We've got UConn playing Army in the Wasabi Fenway Bowl in Boston.
Wasabi is a financial thing, is it not?
I was hoping it'd be like Japanese restaurant themed or something. What's going on here?
See, I'm trying to Wasabi
Fenway Bowl. We're doing our research, folks.
Wasabi Technologies.
I don't like that.
An object storage service provider based in Boston, Massachusetts that sells cloud storage. Okay. And that's what object storage, that's kind of what I figured instead of like the name Wasabi just sounds like software. You know what I mean?
It does. I anything tech like this, I get it out of here. I don't think this belongs in college football. I say this as a guy who works in tech.
All right. So next up at 2:30 p.m.
Yep.
Again on Saturday the 27th, we have one of the best bowls,
the
one
most
of my
prestigious
favorites.
Bowl.
Georgia Tech playing BYU in the Pop-Tarts Bowl in Orlando, Florida.
Can I give a hot take?
I will. Go ahead.
No, because you're about to say you love it. Here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Dude. I think the Pop-Tarts Bowl is kind of overrated. Sue me.
I don't think it's overrated. I think it is like the top bowl game outside the college football playoffs.
It's crazy.
I'm fine with it. Like, I'm fine with the gimmick. It's fun. They have a giant Pop-Tart. They sacrifice a Pop-Tart to
dies.
The toaster.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You can tell. So it reminds me of whenever like these corporations started first using Twitter and realized being funny got engagement.
Like
and
Wendy's.
So they started trying way too hard to be funny.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it reminds me of at times. But hey, for now, the gimmick is fine. Just... It's a little, I get what you mean. Like, it can be overplayed a little bit.
I'm sure you saw this. Both BYU and Georgia Tech have sprinkles on their helmets.
That's actually pretty cool.
But I've seen people making the point, though, like both Georgia Tech and BYU, they fit the criteria for programs that would add sprinkles to their helmets. There are a lot of other teams that would not
yeah.
be doing this. Like, worse, like if Penn State was in this, I don't think they'd be adding sprinkles, despite them being a bad
Maybe.
Team right now.
Maybe that's actually why Notre Dame opted out.
They can't add sprinkles, dude. It's already gold. Kind of makes you think.
Yeah.
You think. All right. Keep it going.
Next up, we have Miami of Ohio, Fresno State, 3:30 p.m. in the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. Okay.
What do you make of this one? Like Snoop Dogg sponsoring his own bowl game.
What? Why, though? What is he selling? Like,
his brand, dude. He's got cookbooks. He's got, you know, he's his
okay.
own media icon, you know?
He's trying to turn into his own little version of Shaq where he's like in every commercial and, you know, doing
yeah.
all this stuff. I get it.
To me, though, Shaq, like, I like Shaq's involvement in things way more because I, from my understanding, like Shaq with like Papa John's, for example, from my understanding, he like owns a decent portion of Papa John's pizza.
Yeah.
He's like on their board or something like that. And so like, that's why he got the Shaq-a-roni. With Snoop Dogg, he seems more like some agent went up to him and was like, yo, dog, want to sponsor a bowl game?
No, I 100%, I'm 100% with you on that. Because like the way Shaq advertises things is way more authentic. Like Shaq is for some reason just relatable as an everyman.
Yeah.
All I'm reminded of is how he has Shaq shoes that he sells at Walmart.
Yes.
And he's like, you know what? I want kids in these places to be able to have access to affordable shoes from a top NBA legend and to be able to say, I have Shaq shoes. And it'd be a cool thing. You know, I want them to be able to actually be able to afford it. So it's just Shaq has this relatable persona while Snoop Dogg was very much
a corporate.
It's not quite on Dwayne the Rock Johnson levels of corporate pushing.
Yeah.
But it's like in between Shaq and Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll be there like in the commentary booth or something for this game. It'll make
sense. You can tell he's trying to be a brand.
He's a brand, in the way. So I don't know.
Okay, next up at 4:45 p.m., we have, ranked, number 25, North Texas, playing 9-3 San Diego State in the Isleta. Is that how you say that?
New Mexico. Probably Isleta. What do we got? Oh, Isleta Resort and Casino, of course, in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay.
The fun begins at Isleta Resort and Casino, Randy.
I think that's an appropriate sponsor. Try to get people to come vacation, you know?
Would you ever go to a place like this?
No, I just have no reason to. First of all, I'm not a gambler.
Same.
Like, it's just, I don't see the enjoyment in it. I don't know. It's just never been my thing. I know we don't even have a lottery in Alabama. So, like, I never grew up around it, and I never had access to it. We don't have casinos. We don't have anything like that.
Scratch-off tickets or anything like that, or like a Powerball type thing?
No. Wow. Nope. We don't have anything like that.
Honestly, good for you. It's degenerate. You shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, I think it is a good thing. It says a lot that nobody in Alabama is like interested in that because we don't have access to it. I think that says a lot, especially about the current state of sports gambling. Not to go into a sports gambling rant, but like a casino, as far as I understand, it's like a resort with like a swimming pool and a nice hotel and a nice bar. Like you have things other than gambling associated with it. So like it's an actual vacation, but you also go to the casino. But I'm trying to figure out, like, is the casino, is it kind of sort of like going to, like, a club, but for older people, they go and they get, like, gambling is part of the money spend where you're going to a place to be able to socialize, basically.
So my parents have gotten weirdly into this now that they're retired. They'll, like, go to the casino once every other month. And, like, they're reasonable with it. They'll usually be, like, setting aside, like, $100 or something and saying, like, if I spend anything more than this, I'm done. You know what I mean? If I lose all the money, it is what it is. But I think it's for people like it's boomers, right? It's older people, retired, who like want to try to get rich. Like they realize their time is running out and they want to like they're not working anymore. So like how do you get fun money? You know, you gamble. You hopefully make a bit of money at the casino. And so I think
and even if you lose it, you had a good time.
Exactly. I think that's the target demographic here. So I could see people like my parents actually wanting to go to Albuquerque. Like, you have to understand, people from the Midwest, like Wisconsin, we're going to see this bowl game. It's going to be 72 and sunny while it's 0 degrees here and snowing. And we'll think, wow, that sounds kind of nice to be at right now. So
that makes a lot of sense. But for the two teams, I mean, I know they're hoping for an audience beyond the two teams, obviously. But like, do people from San Diego need...
No,
but that's why I see these destination resort places and I'm just like, why would I want to go there? Because I live close enough to the beach to an already tropical Gulf Coast area. So I can just drive there on my own anyway, just get a hotel.
There you go.
That is kind of like, I don't feel the need to go to a resort.
No, I agree with that. But it would be better if, like, again, they had a team like Western Michigan or something in here. You know, get the...
It makes sense if you consider, like, people that are from far away, they're going to be flying in. They're not going to know the layout of the land or what's around. Like, I grew up going to Gulf Shores, so, like, I know what Gulf Shores is about. I know where everything is. I know where all the spots are. I know that about Gulf Shores, Panama City Beach, Orange Beach, Destin. I don't need, like, a guided, like, gated-off place to be able to know where to go to have fun. Like, I just know it because it's basically in my backyard.
Yeah. It's Bama privilege, folks.
Bama privilege. see. Next up, we have the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. I don't even want to talk about this one. Virginia, Missouri, who cares?
Who cares? Next up,
was the LSU is playing Houston. I actually think this could be an interesting game.
Do we have Lane Kiffin on the sidelines for this one?
I have no idea. It's in Houston, Texas. The Kinders Texas Bowl. Is that the
Kinder
chocolate?
Egg? Hold up. Is this like a...
The Kinders. Kinders barbecue sauces?
What the heck? Yeah.
Hold on. Kinders. Okay, we got to find out if the chocolate or the...
No, it's the barbecue. I hope whoever wins this game, they douse the coach in a big tub of barbecue sauce.
I hope they do.
It'd be a waste if they didn't.
Exactly. On Monday, this is mine. The J-Lab Birmingham Bowl. J-Lab, this is one of the Lakers sponsors. Okay. Monday, December 29th. It's at 1 p.m. I'll be at work.
Oh, okay. What's J-Lab? True wireless headphones? Okay.
I was going to say, I think those are wireless headphones. I'm pretty sure, 99% sure, those are the brand my wife has. They're like these like off-brand little AirPod things.
She should wear them to the game.
Yeah. Maybe we can get free headphones if we go.
Dude. Okay.
The Birmingham Bowl is one of those things. To be honest, people don't really pay that much attention to it. I went to it, I think, last year, a couple years ago, when it was Troy playing somebody. Forgot who they played. No, it was Troy versus Duke. I remember that.
Oh, wow.
And I remember being surprised at how many Duke football fans there were. There was a dude,
Paradise.
A Duke fan, that was wearing, like, the Blue Devil mask thing and, like, cheering really loud and had on, like, these striped, I don't know if it was, like, paint.
Yeah.
He had on an outfit, and he was there cheering on the Blue Devils. I'm like, that's pretty cool. I like to see that out of Duke.
We got Duke super fans. I love that.
Let's see. On Tuesday, we're now moving on to Tuesday, December 30th in Shreveport. Oh, God. I've been to this bowl game, the Independence Bowl. It's the Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl.
Is this like a military contracting? What is this?
Radiance employee-owned. 100% employee-owned. Okay. Concepts to capabilities.
Oh, this is military. Right. Okay.
Yeah, I see that now. It's a military contractor. We have so many military contractors in Alabama, though. So,
very American.
All right. We just have so many in Huntsville and just in the state in general that it doesn't move me much. I've been to the Independence Bowl before. It's in Shreveport. And I have to say, Shreveport is such a depressing city because it's like, it's just far north enough in Louisiana to actually, like, you don't get the tropical winter vibe. It's gray. It's still chilly. You have to wear a jacket and like a rain jacket.
Oh, heaven forbid. Heaven forbid.
I'm just saying, in the city itself is like a depressing casino city where that's basically all there is. It's a very towny type of city. Imagine if Green Bay didn't have the Packers.
Okay, you've painted a beautiful picture. I know exactly what you're saying. All right.
There you go. And I actually went there in 2006 when we played, or 2007, Saban's first year. I remember going to the bowl game where we played Colorado. And I actually still, in my childhood room, still have like this mini Colorado Buffs football that's like made out of rubber. And I remember getting that because the cheerleaders were throwing them out in this parade.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's a cool little keepsake.
You started the dynasty by being there right
now. I did.
Think about that.
Hey, I was there at the Louisiana Monroe game we lost in 2007. I've been going to Alabama games since like 2003.
Randy's an OG, folks. So. He's an OG. This is why I respect him. All right. Let's keep it going here.
4:30 p.m. Tuesday, December 30th. The Liberty Mutual Music City Bowl in Nashville. I've actually been to this bowl game as well, and I watched us lose to Minnesota in it.
That's Hitler versus Stalin. I can't possibly choose.
I knew you'd have a comment about that. Liberty Mutual. That's the only thing to say about it. Liberty Mutual. I just don't care about financial institutions.
I hate to use the word, but like it's normie. Like normies laugh at the Liberty stuff.
It is Tennessee playing Illinois, so that actually could be an interesting game. I think that actually will be an interesting game. I'm looking at it. 8 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, we have the Valero Alamo Bowl.
What's Valero?
USC and TCU is a gas station.
Gas station chain.
Not much to say about Valero. Interesting. Wednesday, New Year's Eve, we have at 11 a.m. Iowa and Vanderbilt. Going to be a very good game.
It's going to be a sickle bowl.
Forward watching this.
All right.
Yeah, it will be a sickle bowl. The ReliaQuest Bowl. Let me look up.
Agentic AI-powered cybersecurity. That's every buzzword you could fit.
Cybersecurity known for its agentic AI platform, Gray Matter. So you automate cybersecurity? That does not sound like something you want to automate, but I digress, folks. At 1 p.m., we have Arizona State playing Duke in the ACC Champions in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
I like this. I like that it's Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl rather than, like, Frosted Flakes, you know?
Actually, I was about to say, I like that they're using the mascot of the cereal instead of the cereal name itself. It's cool. You can do a lot of gimmicks with it.
I hope Tony's there. I want Tony handing out the trophy, you know?
Exactly. At 2 p.m., we have Michigan and Texas. The ultimate fraud off in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl.
I like the Cheez-It sponsor. I prefer this over Pop-Tarts.
It's weird, though, for it to be the Citrus Bowl, because it's two conflicting foods.
Well, they're both orange.
They are both orange. That is true. At 2:30 p.m. on the 31st, we have the SRS Distribution Las Vegas Bowl featuring Nebraska and Utah.
SRS Distribution. Okay. It's roofing materials and building supplies.
See, we have one in Birmingham. Okay.
What a bowl sponsor, folks. I got one in Madison. That's wild. Never heard of them.
And on Thursday, there's no Thursday games. No Thursday bowl.
We've got our bases covered, folks. We've talked about all the bowl games of the playoffs now. So there you go. Now you're ready.
All right, we know the sponsors. Now, onto the meat. You ready? Wednesday, December 31st. So this is coming out on Thursday. We need to prepare for next Thursday. Okay, so we do need to talk about all playoff games. The scheduling is so weird, man. So these playoff games are going to be on Thursday, January 1st. We release on Thursday. Yeah. So do we talk about them now or next week?
Up to you.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and talk about them. On Wednesday, December 31st, we have Miami and Ohio State, 6:30 p.m. New Year's Eve in the Cotton Bowl. What are your thoughts?
This is a rematch of, is it the 2003 BCS National Championship?
Yes, it is.
A little fun trivia fact, folks, for us unks, as the kids say. I mentioned it earlier today. Like, dude, Miami looks so bad. And I know Ohio State's a flawed team. Like, they're not perfect. They can be beaten, but I don't think Miami's going to be the team to beat them, man. Like, even Miami playing its best football, I don't think that would be enough. But if they show up like they did last week against A&M, this one could get ugly real fast.
I think there's an interesting conversation to be had about rust versus rest.
That's a bar.
You hear that term a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think Ohio State is the type of team that's going to have any type of rust. I think they are so experienced in these post-game situations, especially proved it last year.
Yeah.
They know how to group themselves, regroup. They don't even have to necessarily regroup. I know they lost to Indiana, but
it was close though. But yeah.
They know how to get themselves ready for this playoff run. They know what they need to do. They understand the grind of the season and all these practices leading up to it and just how mentally tough and focused you have to be to survive this sort of grind. I think Ohio State will be fine for that reason. If Ohio State was like a different team, like, that hasn't proven how they could do with the situations, I would actually lean Miami because they would have had a quote-unquote good warm-up game, been able to kind of maybe work out some kinks, throw some, you know, ripples into the playbook. But I think Ohio State takes care of business. I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means, but I could see 7-point Ohio State win.
Yeah, it looks like they're favored right now by 9.5 points, which I guess sounds about right. I don't know. I just, again, with all these games, I want to preface by saying I want them to be close. I want them to be good. But I could see this one going a little bit lopsided, perhaps.
I can see Miami's defense being really good. I could see them trying to keep a cap on Ohio State for as long as possible. But at a certain point, the pressure cooker just builds.
Yeah.
And it takes like one explosive big play for a touchdown and then just the dam breaks, right?
Exactly.
I could see a situation like that happening where they can keep them in check for two, maybe even three quarters until something happens.
Amen, brother.
Thursday, January 1st, New Year's Day, first day of the new year, we have at 11 a.m., Oregon and Texas Tech. I think this is set up to be one of the, well, never works out this way, but on paper, set up to be one of the best second round games. I actually like Texas Tech in this matchup. Again, this is another rust versus rest debate. And Texas Tech is just not, we haven't seen them in a situation where they took a month off playing, only had to practice, and then come out in this type of game. While Oregon had a warm-up game, they kind of know where their team is at. They know what to do, what ripples to have. They were even given the opportunity to play a bunch of second and third stringers to kind of see who's going to be ready to rotate in and out if they need to.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
That being said,
yeah.
And you know, you remember what I said, though, about their play style. So I'll be curious to see how this translates to a team in Texas Tech who, granted, Texas Tech has had a very soft schedule, but you can tell when a team, despite having a soft schedule, has the type of team that will translate well to these higher profile games. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with defense, and their defense, I think, will be fine.
Texas Tech's defense has been great all season long. I mean, their last four.
I mean, fine against a team like Oregon that's going to try to be high flying and try to rush out and put as many points up as quick as possible. Because in Oregon's wins, they all of them kind of go the same way, where they put up a lot of points early and they kind of let off the gas.
Yeah. The thing is, though, Oregon's defense looked kind of sus in the previous game against JMU, and I know it was kind of in garbage time, but you shouldn't allow them to put up 31 points against you, let's face it. And so even though I don't know if Texas Tech has necessarily, one of the better offenses here in the remaining pool of teams, their defense is so solid that I think if they can shut down Oregon, Texas Tech wins in a low scoring game is kind of what I'm saying. And
that's what I was thinking as well.
I think they're going to try to control the game like that, sort of slow it down. It's the kind of thing, man, Oregon's offense, it's so feast or famine, where if they get kind of a few unlucky breaks, a bad overthrow, a missed, a dropped ball or something like that, you get them three and out, they might not have the ball at all an entire quarter if Texas Tech is playing smart, So I think I like Texas Tech in this one, if I had to pick a team.
I do like Texas Tech in it, too. It's so hard to pick this one. I'm going to pick Texas Tech. I'm just going to pick them.
Okay. We agree so far. Two for two, folks.
On to the controversial one. We have Alabama playing Indiana in the Rose Bowl. I am actually so excited and happy that this is in the Rose Bowl. It's just such a great venue. I can't make it. I have a young kid and a pregnant wife, so I can't really.
Whoa, reveal it, folks.
That's okay. People know at this point.
It's official. Baby number two is on the way.
Yeah. But I just love that SEC teams now actually get to play in the Rose Bowl. I feel like it adds.
I know.
You shouldn't be, because it actually makes the game more nationally relevant. It adds to the mystique of the game, because it was starting to kind of lose that a little bit whenever three quarters of college football was just ineligible to ever be able to have a chance to play in it. Why would people care about a bowl game they can't play in?
Do you agree? Do you think the Rose Bowl should be the national championship?
Yes.
Okay, then I agree. Then I'm with you. I think it should be. It'd be so cool. Dude, it really is a one-of-a-kind venue. And I know, I think the thing is, fans adore the Rose Bowl. Any fan who's been there will agree, this is the coolest place to ever watch a football game. I think that, the corporate guys, the broadcasting guys, the ESPN guys, and, Fox guys, I think they hate it because it's so dated and it doesn't have, all these suites and stuff that kind of modern stadiums have. It's literally just a giant bowl, outside. But that's what makes it special. That's what makes it so cool.
I don't get the vibe that the commentators hate it. They love to show, the aerial shots and talk about the atmosphere and this and that. I think a lot of the commentators are actually kind of more old school guys.
The commentators? Maybe, the
commentators, C-suits. I mean the actual people calling the game.
Yeah, yeah. But, the business executives who are going to LA and wanting to have, a luxury experience,
I agree with you there. The talking heads may not like it, but the people who actually call games, the people who, Pat McAfee will love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The people who actually go on college game day would love it. Anyways.
The game.
About the actual game itself.
Let's talk about it.
You just take things one game at a time.
Oh my God. This is warfare, Randy. I'm not going to fall for it, dude.
You just gotta take it. But that is what it is, though. You take the game, take the season one game at a time. I was given we were shown a lot of positives from our team, especially the last three quarters of the Oklahoma game. We just hope that we can keep it together and pull that together for another performance. And I think the rust versus rest debate is gonna come into play here. But I just have this weird belief in Kurt Cignetti that he's gonna have them ready. And it wouldn't be because he doesn't know how to have them mentally ready for it, but I could see maybe perhaps being inexperienced in terms of gearing up for a postseason run when it comes to actual schematic things. Mm-hmm. I can kind of see that playing into it. I don't know.
My concern is obviously Bama's going to be one of the more athletic teams they faced all year. I mean, I know they did beat Ohio State, but the way I see Indiana losing this is if Bama basically does what Oklahoma did, which is come out guns blazing, get a huge lead early on, and kind of force Indiana to maybe play a little bit differently than they want to. I think Indiana's going to want to come in and very much be conservative, kind of controlling, like what we saw against Ohio State, like try to make this a low-scoring, very possession-focused game, you know what I mean? But if Bama, like, just, I don't know, you know, Ryan Williams, 17-year-old, comes out and just, like, scores on the opening drive off of, like, a huge 50-yard touchdown, like, I think it kind of flips the script. And so for me, like, I think the first quarter of this game is going to be the most telling for both teams, really, of kind of who's going to set the tone for the rest of the game.
I actually agree with that. And we have shown a propensity to score in very long first drives of the game and, like, take 10 minutes, get the ball to start the game, take 10 minutes and drive down the field and score. We did that versus Florida State. People forget because of how the rest of the game went. But our first drive of the game, I remember watching and thinking, wow, this team's different, because we just marched down the field, scored in 10 minutes on the most perfect, beautiful drive you've ever seen. And we've done that on like 3 or 4 games where the first drive of the game, it just looks beautiful. And then we kind of stall out for a little bit, keep trying to force our offense. If we have a drive like that to start the game, I would feel very good about our chances. But not having a drive like that to start off the game isn't going to make me start completely dooming. Unless we just have multiple 3-and-outs trying to force our offense. I think one thing that's actually going to really play into this is the fact that we had 2 weeks off, 13 days off in between the SEC championship game and the first round playoff game at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And then we have another 13 days off for this game. And it's like the perfect amount of time to get your players healthy, but not have any rust set in and to kind of know where your team is at.
I know.
It's not too much time off. Like, it's very consistent with the amount of time. Despite the weird
days, if you recall last year, all 4 teams that had the bye lost. Now, part of that was because, you know, you look at the seeding and stuff, and, like, Boise State got a bye, or someone got a bye that shouldn't have gotten a bye. But, yeah, I know what you mean. On the other hand, like, same with Ryan Day in Ohio State. I could see Kurt Cignetti, as best as you reasonably can, keeping the team ready, like, despite this, like, month-long break. I think they're focused, for sure, in a way that most teams aren't. And so, I don't know, I think it kind of evens out a little bit. Like, to me, what's crazy is that Indiana's favorite. Like, I get it. They're the number one team, and they're undefeated, and they got the Heisman. Like, but, like, it's still, like, I'm just going to say, it's so, so weird seeing Indiana favored over Alabama. I'll never get over this.
Oh, but, yeah. If he said, even 2 years ago, if he said something like
that, it's unfathomable.
Crazy.
It's unbelievable.
But the point I was trying to make is about the health of our team. We've had a lot of banged up, injured players in the Oklahoma game to finally get the offense rolling. All it took was we had a tight end, Josh Cuevas, really good. He's the perfect tight end because he's great at blocking in the run game, pass game, and he simulates what a run game should in terms of how it keeps the defense honest. Mm-hmm. And without him, we couldn't get anything going. He was on a very strict snap count because he was still a little banged up, but actually able to play. And just the first time we actually scored was because he had two catches in the perfect spot to keep the defense honest. All of a sudden, in the exact spot of the field that is now opened up because the linebackers are having to rotate and account for him, is where Latia Brooks caught the ball to score on that fourth down play when we were down 0-17 and got our first score of the game. So I'm just saying, he makes a massive difference, and now he has another 2 weeks to get even healthier. We might get some other players back. That gives me a good feeling. And more than anything, I'm just excited to watch the game, just see what happens.
So you're picking Alabama?
If it involves my team, I'm not going to make a pick.
Okay. Well, I will say this. This is me throwing heat and shade, Randy. But I think Alabama tends to beat teams that beat themselves. And I don't think Indiana is going to beat itself. I'll leave it at that.
Randy, I think you have a good point. Mendoza does have a tendency to throw a pick sometimes. If you remember, he did throw a pick 6 versus Oregon. If we can find a way to force him to do that, I don't remember how good their offensive line is, but if they If they have any weak point of their offensive line or anything we can exploit, you know, we might try to set it up schematically if we can't just straight up do it. You know what I mean? We might try to set it up schematically, but that can take a couple quarters, and we have to rely on our offense to sustain drives in the meantime while we set that up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of what happened versus Oklahoma. So I can kind of get an idea of how this game's going to play out and what to look for. But again, it's an exciting game.
Should be a good one. I think all the games on Thursday should be pretty good, which let's preview the final one now, folks. Georgia, SEC champion, taking on Ole Miss without Lane Kiffin. You know, Randy, I remember saying like a couple of weeks ago that I had no faith in Ole Miss now that they don't have a head coach. But though I know it was against Tulane, I genuinely was very impressed by their team and the performance and kind of the sort of just the vibe around that school right now and in that program. I kind of think Ole Miss could pull this off despite being the underdog in this one.
My lock of the week is Ole Miss winning this game.
Wow. Lock it in, folks.
They have very much bought into Pete Golding and are, you know, kind of surrounding themselves around his aura, so to speak. And I've said plenty of times on the Jim podcast that I think Pete Golding's a great hire. And for multiple reasons, but it's like the most perfect interim to head coach hire you can make, because he's going to be able to rally this team at the perfect moment this season. And then I think he's going to actually be a good head coach beyond that. Mm-hmm. So it's the perfect storm of both worlds. But yeah, I was going to say that impressed me because Tulane, it was a 41-10 win over Tulane, but that touchdown Tulane got was in total garbage time. Mm-hmm. And Ole Miss played just a very clean game against a very fundamentally...
very prepared.
What looked to be...
Tulane
was not sloppy.
Right.
But they still just beat them very soundly, not even having to force them to make mistakes.
Like if Ole Miss was not as focused, was kind of as disoriented as we maybe expect them to be with Lane Kiffin leaving, they'd probably still win, but it wouldn't be like this. It wouldn't be this easy. It wouldn't look this clean, you know? And so I definitely give them credit for that.
Exactly. And that's why I'm going to choose them. It's hard to pick against Kirby in this type of situation.
And they lost last year, first round. So I don't know.
That's true. That last year's team was not nearly as good as this year's team. I kind of wonder, like... I don't know if this would play into it at all. I think Kirby's a little too smart to let this get into the team's head. I think
Kirby's too smart.
But the fact that they quote unquote got the Alabama monkey off their back, I don't know if they're like feel this sense of total emotional relief that they kind of lose focus a little bit.
I think they're still scared. If Bama beats Indiana, I think they play scared because they're like, oh no, are we going to have to beat Bama in the national championship? I legit think that doubt will creep in if Bama beats Indiana mere moments before kickoff. Just saying.
You can't even really look. I know what you're saying.
Think about it. You can't look at it that way.
I don't even know who we're really playing after Indiana, who we set to play.
You'd be playing Oregon,
no,
Texas
it's not
Tech.
Georgia. Okay, there you go. But again, one game at a time.
One game at a time, folks. I will say, how funny would it be if Ole Miss, after all this, ends up winning the national championship? Like, just
that would be
so
hilarious.
Comedic.
The greatest story.
I'm rooting for them, dude. Like, honestly, as a neutral fan, like, if I had to pick one team just because of the storyline, and I say this as, like, the world's biggest SEC hater, I want Ole Miss to win the national championship because I want to spite Lane Kiffin and what he represents for college football right now.
I agree with you. I understand. But, well, I don't agree that I want them to win the national championship.
But despite,
just for obvious reasons.
Yeah. No, I get that. But their story is so compelling. It's hard.
If we can't win it, I'd be fine with them winning it.
Well, there you go.
And I just want to give some context here. You have to remember, Ole Miss had an 11-point lead going into the fourth quarter of the game earlier in the season.
Really? I actually forgot about that.
Yeah, they had a late lead and they blew it. Georgia had a couple of comeback wins.
Oh yeah, they did. It's 17 points in the fourth quarter. I remember this now. Yeah.
Looks like Trinidad Chambliss did not have his best game. 19-36, one touchdown, 263 passing yards. I mean, that's not terrible, but
they can beat Georgia. Like, they have it in them. Like, I really believe they're capable of doing it, getting the job done.
Yeah, two rushing touchdowns, okay. I mean, and he's had more starts under his belt, while Georgia's just a more consistent version of themselves. Mm-hmm. While Ole Miss, I think, has improved more throughout the season.
I agree with that.
Especially with the new starting quarterback and all that. So it'll be a very interesting matchup, very interesting game, to say the least.
Should be a good one. I really think outside of Miami and Ohio State, like, not to jinx them so hard, because I am jinxing them, I know this. But like, I do think all three of these games on Thursday, on New Year's Day, they should all be excellent. So really looking forward to that. Looking forward to it, folks. Randy, thank you for previewing all these games with me, as well as the Bowl sponsors. Always appreciate that. And folks at home, thank you for listening to the Jim Bobcast. Hope you all have a wonderful holiday season. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah, I guess. I don't know. And Happy New Year as well, I guess, that we convene in 2026. Until then, folks, as always, high tide.